Today is March 30th, 2016, and this is episode number 353 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a courier for a merchant who doubles as a spy. I'm playing D&D again. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Now, the fact that you revealed that you are also a spy, is that a spoiler for the game? Like any of the other players, if they hear that, is that going to change the outcome?
No, it's actually it's interesting. The campaign that I'm in is one part local live group, and then two parts remote group by phone. And because we live in different towns, right? This is being run by my best friend, one of my best friends since junior high. And it's involving several of us that used to play, and he wanted to do something with us. And so what he's doing is that he's actually running us as three separate parties, but the actions within the same world and the actions of any of the three groups will affect what happens to the other two groups.
I think that's really cool.
It's going to be incredibly difficult for him to juggle, but so far it's been a lot of fun. And my character is I'm tasked with spying. I'm a rogue. I'm spying. See, a really interesting thing about that is this. I've never played a rogue before because I've always thought that rogues in a live group didn't make a whole lot of sense, because the things that rogues or thieves, if you go back to the AD&D, the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons days, like I do, the things that they do are really much more tailored to solo adventures. And when you've got a live group playing, the last thing you want to do is have, you know, three or four people go off in another room for 2 or 3 hours while the rogue goes and seeks through and does all the cool stuff by himself. But here I am. I'm essentially doing one big solo adventure. And so I get this opportunity to be a rogue, which is, again, what the new 5th edition D&D calls thieves. And it's interesting. It's fun so far.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah. 5th edition. It's a really good system. If you are a D&D person and you haven't checked out the 5th edition, do so. I think it's the best version of the game since AD&D.
That's good to know. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Cool.
This is the role playing game show, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're supposed to say no.
Oh,
it's not. This is the Apple Context Machine. This is the show where we're supposed to talk about Apple stuff.
Hold on. Oh. Welcome to Apple Context Machine.
Excellent. Excellent. My rabbit hole is cozy, isn't it?
It is. And it's especially appreciated on a day like this where I need a little bit of coziness, and it's just a little bit chilly, and there's occasional snow flurries, but it's not bad. And it's just one of those days where some snuggling is nice.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, speaking of snuggling.
Yes.
North Carolina.
I shouldn't laugh because I'll only encourage you.
North Carolina. Look, we're going to venture a little bit into politics here because politics and technology intersect all the time.
Also, our show, and we can talk about what we want. But yeah, yes, they're clearly intersecting here.
To be fair, while we can talk about whatever we want, that doesn't mean that people have to listen to us.
Wait, I need to write that one down. That's a good thing to know.
And there are some people who don't like it when politics are discussed on a tech show. And it's usually folks who actually disagree with the politics being discussed. But nonetheless, the problem is that The problem with not talking about politics is that technology and politics intersect, and the bigger Apple gets,
the more that's going to happen. Yeah. And it's happening right now in North Carolina.
It is happening right now in North Carolina, where Apple operates two or three data centers.
Mm-hmm. Google and Facebook have data centers there, too, as I recall.
Yep. North Carolina is actually a lot of tech companies like North Carolina. And a lot of people like North Carolina. North Carolina is generally speaking, a lovely state. Mm-hmm. Charlotte's a lovely town.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is this, and we'll get to why we're talking about this, but what happened is this. Charlotte passed a local resolution essentially allowing people to use bathrooms according to their gender identity as opposed to their biological gender.
Mm-hmm.
So this specifically affects the transgender community. And conservatives don't care for that sort of thing, generally speaking, especially in the South. And the North Carolina legislative branch introduced and passed a law that essentially says that municipalities can't pass laws to this about these things. Actually, I had a good link to it. So anyway, it keeps it basically keeps progressive towns from passing any kind of progressive ordinance dealing with such things as who can use the darn bathroom, because it's, you know, it's so important, and it's definitely something to get bent out of shape about. And I'm being as sarcastic as I possibly can. And they introduced the legislation, they passed it, and it was signed into law by Governor, whatever her name is, within 12 hours. And this has brought universal condemnation from the progressive side of the world. And of course, the conservative side of the world is actually cheering, but that's okay. And Silicon Valley tends toward the progressive when it comes to social issues.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole bunch of Silicon Valley and non-Silicon Valley tech companies and some other groups, too, including Laureen Powell Jobs, by the way.
Who's actually an individual, not a group. I'm pointing that out because you are mostly pedantic.
I was going to get to that. She signed as the director of the Emerson Collective.
Oh, you get off on a technicality.
Yeah. Well, alternately, I was right all along.
Tomato, potato, whatever.
So, McCrory is her name. Governor McCrory is the governor who signed this into law. All these tech companies signed on to a letter asking North Carolina to overturn this to repeal this legislation, because it would have to be repealed at this point. And that included Apple CEO Tim Cook, a homosexual who is out.
Mm-hmm.
It also included lots and lots of other tech luminaries who are not homosexual or out of the closet, as the case may be. But anyway, lots of straight people, too. Mm-hmm. Salesforce, which is actually threatened to just stop doing business in North Carolina entirely, signed on to this. Levi Strauss Company signed on to it. Marissa Meyer over at Yahoo. Interestingly, Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, mm-hmm. signed on to it, but Larry Page, the CEO of Alphabet, was not a signatory.
Interesting. That may not mean anything, but still.
It probably doesn't.
Interesting.
Larry Page has definitely had other progressive opinions that are out there. I can't imagine that he didn't support this, but I was a little bit surprised that he wasn't also a signatory, but whatever. Mark Zuckerberg signed on to it. Bob and Harvey Weinstein of the Weinstein Company.
Mm-hmm.
They're Hollywood folks.
Mm-hmm.
Big time production company. They signed on to it. Airbnb, several VC firms, Pfizer, the pharmaceutical giant,
mm-hmm.
LinkedIn. Like, I think it was 75. It was more than 70 different organizations and their leaders signed on to this. Yelp, Quip, Nextdoor, Jawbone. They're not that big. Y Combinator folks, Lyft. Uber was not a signatory, by the way. Lyft was.
Interesting.
Yep. So anyway, they all signed on to this. They asked North Carolina to repeal the bill. Now, unstated is we do a lot of business in your state. And if you'd like to keep doing that, you're going to fix us. They didn't say that.
But it's kind of implied.
It's fairly well implied. Salesforce has actually come out and said it separately. So we're going to stop doing business there. I know San Francisco's has prohibited city employees from traveling to North Carolina. Boston is considering the same thing. Several towns and cities, some of which are quite large, have either passed similar restrictions or ordered similar restrictions in case it's the mayor, or are considering similar restrictions. But then we've got the fact that we've got some of these companies who have major data centers there.
Right. Apple being one of them.
Yeah. Apple being one of them. Facebook and Google both have data centers there too. And the question is, what would they do? Would they pull out?
It would be crazy expensive to do that. But I can see where companies with bankrolls on this scale would consider doing something like that. I mean, if Apple and Facebook and Google are publicly condemning this new law and say, hey, you have to change it, and then nothing happens, and they don't do anything in response, then any future letters that they sign publicly condemning something will really have no value.
Well, here's what they can do. They're not going to pull out. There's no way. They're not going to close up shop.
It would be ridiculously expensive, and it would take also a long time.
We're talking about plans, some of which are a decade or more in the works, and all of which will affect operations in the coming decades.
Right.
It would take an enormous amount of time to shift this stuff. And they probably won't do that. But I would put up. What would I actually put up? Yeah, I'd bet $1,000. I'd bet $1,000, and that's a not insignificant amount of money for me, especially to just bet. But I'd bet $1,000 that they will not launch new facilities in North Carolina while something like this is in effect.
I could see that happening.
And they could even conceivably cancel anything that's in the works. I know that Facebook is actually going to be breaking ground here shortly on a major new facility, but that's already years in the making.
Right. Yeah. It's not like they can just on a dime turn and say, never mind, we'll go build this in Florida or Wyoming or wherever.
Right. So
then what do companies really do? I mean, they can stop future building.
Well, they can, of course, lobby. Right? They can lobby in their local legislature. Sorry, they can lobby. They're doing business there. They have business interests. It is very legitimate for a company like Apple or Facebook or Google to lobby in the North Carolina legislature.
Sure.
As long as lobbying is legal. And they could conceivably support a PAC or other group seeking to overturn these laws. Now, there's lots of signatories to this letter. And this letter basically, it doesn't actually demand, it actually urged North Carolina to repeal the law. And they, arguing that This is not a bill that reflects the values of our companies or our country. Excuse me, the values of our companies of our country or even the overwhelming majority of North Carolinians, which I believe is true, but I haven't actually seen the numbers on that. But let's just make certainly what they're arguing, and they're saying they're disappointed in it. That this isn't good for business. This isn't certainly not good for our businesses. But within a group of 75 leaders, of course, you have boards involved too. Some of them are going to care less than others. And I would actually imagine that the majority of people who signed on to this, the majority of the companies who signed on to this, won't actually do much of anything other than sign their names to stuff something like this.
So in many ways, this is little more than a symbolic gesture.
I would call it more than symbolic. I would say for some of them, it's a little more than symbolic. For others, it's probably very important. I would imagine for a company like Apple, regardless of, and actually, not because of Tim Cook's own personal sexual orientation, it's because of the ideals within the company about discrimination, especially under the helm of Tim Cook and his very aggressive stance on progressive issues concerning discrimination. I would assume that for Apple, it'll be much more than a symbolic thing. I would imagine that Apple is quite concerned about this. How busy Microsoft signed on to this too, by the way.
All right. Here's something companies could do. But this would be companies that have a public facing part of their business, meaning like storefronts where customers can come in. They could set up their restrooms so that they're gender neutral. And that would be a business decision and not a government decision. And they would be able to do that.
True. I believe that Charlotte's ordinance dealt with public restrooms. So I don't know that anything that was passed either by House Bill 2, which is what this law was called, or what Charlotte was trying to do. I don't know if those actually affected the way private companies were operating there.
I don't think it had impact on private companies, but that's one thing that private companies could do to show their displeasure with this new law.
True. I don't know that too many people actually want totally gender neutral bathrooms.
No, but it's nice to have an option. You know, like you could have men's room, women's room, and the other, I mean, whatever you want to call it, a family or
there are family rooms. And I mean, the real way for these companies to actually sort of make a passive aggressive stance on this would be to have it be official company policy that the gender identity is what counts for bathroom facilities. I mean, that would be the direct way to answer this.
Yeah. And my guess is that not every company has the luxury of putting up an ultimatum like Salesforce and saying, look, change it or we're done doing business in this state.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how much business Salesforce does in North Carolina, but they probably do business in North Carolina. So Salesforce turning its back on all of that business is it's actually the kind of thing that you know could result in a shareholders lawsuit.
Sure.
It's a pretty bold stance. I don't know. There's definitely a lot of stuff that these companies could do in politics, but you have to remember that that at this point, red states in particular have become so gerrymandered that it's going to be interesting to see if the politics can change here. It'd be interesting to see if lobbying will matter. It'd be interesting. You know, there are certainly some people who will see letters like this and threats like this as just that, threats, and you can't tell us what to do.
True. Now, a lawsuit contesting the constitutionality of the bill, well, now law, that could have some impact too, because you could have this go far enough where the Supreme Court says, no, that we're striking down your law.
That's possible. Kind of depends on how it was constructed. I mean, because what the law doesn't actually, wait, this is true. I could be.
See, wrong. I could be covering for you while you look something up, but you're singing.
Yeah, go ahead and cover for me.
Oh no, I liked that you were singing. Now my assumption is that a law that was put together so that it was and presented and voted on and signed into law over a 12-hour window, there may be some pretty big holes in the way this is written.
Well, so. Oh, no, it does. Interesting. All right. So the first thing the law does is it overrides all local ordinance concerning wages, employment, and public accommodations. So in other words, if a city tried to pass a minimum wage bill that was, you know, higher than the national minimum wage bill, they could not do so, according to this law. You know, it's always fascinating to me how the GOP thinks that local businesses is a local government is always preferable, unless, of course, that local government is doing something of a progressive nature. But that's definitely outside of our wheelhouse here. The law also prohibits local municipalities from creating their own rules prohibiting, and I'm quoting from ABC here, from creating their own rules prohibiting discrimination in public places based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, that may not violate the Constitution. Saying, you know, a state saying that the municipalities can't do this stuff may not be something that the Supreme Court would have any interest in. Legitimately, may not. But then it also, this is the part where it could have a problem. It says the law also, this I'm quoting again from ABC, also directs all public schools, government agencies, and public college campuses to require that multiple occupancy bathrooms and changing facilities, such as locker rooms, be designated for use only by people based on their biological sex, quote unquote, stated on their birth certificate. So that is something the Supreme Court may actually be interested in. So I don't know. We'll see. You know, in addition to Jeff and I not actually being lawyers, we are also not politicians, legislators, or doctors.
That's true. Although I have played two of those professions on stage.
That's true. You have. And that does make you our resident expert.
That's right. At least on all things medical and legal.
And I once auditioned for the role of nurse practitioner Susie. I didn't get the part.
But you auditioned. So that makes you a paralegal.
for the doctor, for the medical field.
Oh, that's right. No, paralegal is just in a...
that's great, actually.
That makes you an LPN.
I was actually auditioning for nurse. Anyway, whatever. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Apple, the involvement of these tech companies will be interesting to see what happens. You know, sometimes money does talk. Sometimes. Oftentimes.
I hope in this case it does, and the money pushes North Carolina into positive change.
Yeah, we can hope.
Yeah.
All righty. Shall we move on?
Sure. What else do you want to talk about today?
Let us think differently about Apple Media Events, or maybe discuss the possibility that we should think differently about Apple Media Events.
Okay. I'm up for that. The discussion. Yeah.
So an interesting thing has happened. And
you mean that we have two iPads with the same name?
Don't even get me started on that.
Sorry about that. Okay. Carry on.
But now that you started me, my iPad Pro parentheses, 9.7 inch closed parentheses arrives tomorrow.
Just so you know, I'm really excited that your new iPad showing up. I'm going to call it the Pro 9. So you have the Pro 9. I have the Pro 12.
Are you sure you should call it the Pro 10? Apple called it in that image. It was called the iPad Pro 10.
This is my arbitrary naming nomenclature, and it stands.
It is the iPad Pro parentheses 9.7 inch close parentheses. That's
the
name of
this
thing.
Did you miss the part where I said my naming nomenclature?
So anyway,
so you have the Pro 9. You will have the Pro 9 tomorrow. I have the Pro 12 today.
Assuming I actually catch the guy. I got to catch the delivery.
That's always the tricky part.
Yeah. And I can't hear the front doorbell from where my office is.
You know what you need is one of those doorbells that has the camera and the remote alert. So it comes up on your iPhone. And
yeah, I asked them about doing a review, and they weren't particularly interested. So
that's unfortunate.
I kind of lost my interest in reviewing it. That's beside the point. Apple announced the iPhone SE. They announced some new changes in tvOS.
Mm-hmm.
And they announced the iPad Pro parentheses 9.7 inch close parentheses.
The Pro 9.
And it's so childish. I'm so childish sometimes.
Yeah, well, and I'm really stubborn. So every time you rattle off your name.
My stubborn name?
I'm going to follow up by saying Pro 9.
With your stubborn name. Excellent. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. So
I just realized how politics works and why nothing gets accomplished.
Yay! I noticed some people kvetching.
Mm-hmm. Let me guess. They were saying the media event was pointless and
none of this stuff deserves a media event.
Yeah.
You know what? So they make a smaller iPad Pro that deserves a media event. So they make a smaller iPhone 6S that deserves a media event. And it was in particular. So I know I've had this interest in what was the iPad Air 3,
mm-hmm.
or the iPad Pro Nano 3 Air Mini pseudo thing, or User the experience. iPad Pro parentheses 9.7 inch close parentheses
Pro 9.
And so I was certainly interested in that, right? I'm not particularly interested in the SE, and I think it was people in particular kvetching about the SE, saying that this is the most pointless media event of all time. And
clearly they've never watched a Samsung media event.
Well, they were specifying Apple.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I didn't get it. So, you know, the first thing I didn't get is why wouldn't this new iPad
Yes.
Deserve a media event. Every other iPad's gotten a media event.
That's a good point.
Every other iPad has been an iterative improvement. Now, this is the first time, admittedly. This is the first time. No, it's not even the first time. The iPad Mini 4 was part of the media event.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, like, I can't imagine the mindset of someone saying that that doesn't deserve a media event. That doesn't make any sense to me. So, I mean, like, it would be the first iPad that Apple hasn't introduced via a media event.
Well, if this is a product that doesn't interest you personally, then it's much easier to look at the event and say it was pointless because you didn't get announcements that you wanted or that interested you directly.
Yeah, I guess that's it. And the same thing with the SE. The SE doesn't, the iPhone SE doesn't interest me as a potential user. I have absolutely fallen in love with the 6 and 6S form factor, that size.
Mm-hmm.
And will no doubt adopt the iPhone 7 in that same size.
I think I very likely will be doing the same thing.
But to me, it was so obvious about how why the SE was important. It was important because it significantly ups the specs, as it were. It ups the offering that Apple has in that $400 price range, that zero for markets that have subsidized plans, that zero down offering. This is the first time we've actually had a new device be the zero down product.
That's a significant point right there. All previous, I'll call them entry-level phones from Apple, or entry point phones from Apple, have been previous year's technology. This is the first time it's been the current technology that's in their bigger screens.
Right. And for markets outside that don't have subsidized plans, because you'll find that in Europe with subsidized plans, and you'll find it in the States, obviously. And in a couple other markets here and there, but by and large, a lot of the rest of the world actually charges for devices.
Mm-hmm.
In those markets, this again, it's still the first time that the $400 price point has been addressed by a new device. And that is super important for Apple.
Mm-hmm. It changes how Apple competes in that space. Because now they're offering something that's new as opposed to something that is just the less expensive technology.
Right. Last year's technology.
Mm-hmm.
Or the year before that's technology even. And this is significant, but it's not significant to you if you're not if you know you're waiting for the iPhone 7. And that's when it sort of hit me that Apple has become so large that we're entering an era where media events might not pertain. I'm going to rephrase that, where media events will often not pertain to be germane to everybody, not be aimed at everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time we've been at that point since Apple was a computer only company.
That's true. Back in the day when Apple would host a media event, they were talking about something that was happening with the Mac computer line. And even if you weren't ready to buy the new model, you were still interested because at some point you were going to be buying, and it was also the product line that that you were invested in. So, of course, yeah, you had an interest.
And it was, you know, we always, even if we weren't going to buy, we'd always dream. And, you know, and for many of us, even if it was a consumer product and we were pro users, well, we're thinking about our family and friends.
Right. And we're curious what new features were showing up there that might be coming out there first and coming to the Pro line later. I mean, that's what happened with USB.
Right. And this is kind of we're entering into a different era for Apple fans, where Apple is going to be doing more and more things that may not interest people. Like the Apple Watch doesn't interest everybody.
True.
The Apple Car will not interest everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Apple TV doesn't even interest everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point.
iPad doesn't interest everybody. I personally am not really all that interested in the iPad mini product line, personally.
You know, now that the iPad Pro is out, my interest in the iPad mini is growing, which probably sounds kind of weird, but I do a lot of reading on my iPads, and the smaller form factor of the mini is great as a reading device.
Right. That's true. It is. It really is.
And so now I'm looking at my first generation mini. I've never felt a need to replace it, but now I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, maybe I should upgrade this one. And then maybe I'm just a mini and a pro user and I won't a pro 12 user and I won't ever go to the Pro 9.
You mean the iPad Pro parentheses 12.9 close parentheses? 12.9 inches close parentheses.
Pro 12. Yes, that's the one.
So I would say to anyone who found that media event disappointing to A, get used to it. It's going to happen more. And B, to think differently about it. Because there was nothing different about that event than any other iPad and iPhone event. And to think that event was somehow indicative of Apple losing its mojo. And I get so angry when I see people saying things like that because it is so devoid of logic. This media event was just as vital and just as important as any other iPhone/iPad media event that Apple has ever done.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm with you. I think this was a good event, and Apple had good announcements. They just didn't apply to everyone.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people totally forgot about the beginning of the media event, where Tim Cook stood on stage and said that Apple was not going to give up the fight to protect our encryption and our privacy. I think that was a very important part of the event too.
Well, I also think the environment was the important part, and our own John Matralaro said on TDO that he thought that the environmental stuff was filler. Again, I would say that sort of projecting your. It wasn't filler. It felt rushed. We already said that on TDO. Mm-hmm. But it was actually Apple making an important stand on a topic that Apple thinks is important. And, you know, seeing the environmental stuff, let alone the FBI thing mentioned in a media event, is not indicative of Apple not having anything to say. It's indicative of the importance that Apple feels that those topics have.
I agree completely. I saw no filler in that event at all.
Yeah. All right. Rock and roll.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that that it's time for people to start thinking differently about Apple's media events.
Yep.
And remember, we're a big family now with a lot of different perspectives on what's important in the company.
Yeah. Yeah. And the bigger Apple gets, the more of that there will be that was unimportant to you. Apple Music doesn't appeal to a lot of Apple fans. Apple TV will not appeal to a lot of Apple fans.
I'm a big Apple TV fan. I love mine. But I'm also a cord cutter.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so I was very pleased to see folders come to Apple TV. I was very pleased to see the new dictation features come to Apple TV. I would have liked folders to be tabs, though. But now I'm just being a complaining person.
That's okay. You can do that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Alrighty. Let's see here. So where is Apple in the FBI? Where is that going?
Well, okay. What we know right now is that the FBI was able to get into Syed Farooq's iPhone, Syed Farooq being one of the two shooters involved in the December mass shooting in San Bernardino. And so the FBI got into the phone. They got data out of it. They did it with the assistance of an unnamed third-party company, and they used an undisclosed procedure to get the data off the phone.
We don't know what they got.
Right.
Well, we do know what they got. They got nothing. There's nothing on that phone.
Right. My guess is that now they know what sort of high score Syed could get on Flappy Birds.
And probably not even that.
Yeah, probably not even that.
But we don't actually know. And they haven't said. They probably, I can't imagine the FBI will actually, what I can imagine is if they got actionable intelligence off the device, that there will come a day where they say we got actionable intelligence off that device. I don't know that I will believe them, and I'm ashamed.
You know, you just brought up a really big thing, and it's that this case, I believe, has shaken the trust that the public, just generally speaking, has in the FBI.
Some of the public.
That's why I said generally speaking.
And it's further shaken. Really what it's done is it's sort of given those who either don't trust the government or don't. Yeah, it's given people who don't trust the government for whatever reason, further reason to do so.
Yeah. Yes. And
I've actually heard some people in the national media commentators. I heard on NPR, I heard I think it was it NPR or BBC? I think it was NPR. Golly, I can't remember now. Talking to a tech blogger, and I forget her name, and she gave a fairly just the facts report of it, but she said that Apple and the FBI both look bad, and I don't see Apple looking bad in this.
Well, okay. The way that I can see people looking at Apple and thinking, oh, they look bad now, is that someone found a way to hack into the iPhone.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but
we know that there are security holes in iOS.
Yeah, but for the general public, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But then the other side of it, the FBI looking bad. Yeah, I think the FBI does look bad because they acted in a way that you and I were both calling out as disingenuous from the beginning with this whole case. And now it feels like what they've done is validate what we were saying. Because they did get into the phone. They didn't need Apple's help. And all along, they were saying, well, the only way to do this is with Apple's help.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, they turn around and they're like, well, never mind. Actually, we did get in. And so we're good. Bye.
Yeah. Now that we're about to lose this case, you know, we've got this other way of getting everything. Everything's cool.
Right. And so now in situations where I would have presumed that the FBI was being very straightforward in whatever data or whatever requests they were making as part of an investigation, I will now question all of those.
Yeah. And on top of that, of course, we had the assertion the entire time from both the DOJ in the form of Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, mm-hmm. and FBI Director James Comey, both insisting this is all just about one phone.
And this is another place where my ability to feel I can trust what the FBI and Department of Justice are saying has faltered.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm not on the side of, I don't hate the government. I actually think the government does a really good job at a lot of things. I'm mm-hmm. not a government hater. I'm not an FBI hater. I'm not an NSA hater. I'm a believer that what's that quote from Justice?
The Justice Scalia quote.
No. The one from 1929 that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Oh, right. Oh, that was such a good quote too.
Yeah, essentially that. We are at the most danger of bad things happening because of good people with good intentions. That's not a quote. That's a paraphrase, and it's not even a great paraphrase. But I'm a big believer in that concept, and I'm a big believer that people who want to do people trying to achieve something that they deem as good can absolutely do harm in the process. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's what I'm a believer of.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
And in this particular case, I believe that the DOJ and the FBI have both their belief that their ability to access encrypted communications and encrypted devices is more important than our ability to protect ourselves from malicious actors around the planet. I believe that they are wrong there. I believe that they are misguided and factually wrong both.
I agree. And it raises a new question or another question for me, which is then why are they saying just this once, just this one phone?
Right. Well, I haven't written about this yet, but the ACLU sent out a statement this morning looking at, they put together a map of the United States where the government has tried to use the All Writs Act to force Apple or Google, those two companies, to help investigators get data off a locked phone. Not in those won't be all the same as what had happened with San Bernardino, because this was the first time the government's ordered Apple or any other company to create software, mm-hmm. right? I mean, which is just off the charts wrong, in my opinion. But mm-hmm. But they've used the All Writs Act to compel cooperation in 63 other cases or 62 other cases, and you know, it just shows that this has never been about one phone. This has been about being able to force these companies to give the government access because they feel they need that access.
Which leaves a very bad taste in my mouth, because it comes back to Director Comey saying just this phone, just this once. Attorney General Loretta Lynch saying the same thing.
Yeah, I was disappointed that Stephen Colbert didn't push back on that.
I was disappointed as well.
That was super frustrating. I don't know if he's
really played softball with this one.
He really has. To not his credit. And I'm a huge fan of Mr. Colbert.
As am I.
And I'm sure that he's just devastated to hear that I'm disappointed.
You know, I just got a text. It's Steven. And wow, you're right. It says, "What's up with Brian?" And then it has the little tear face emoji.
I don't blame him. I'm sure he's quite upset. So on top of that, we have the DOJ vowing in a statement to continue to use the courts to compel the help of tech companies.
And that's like salt in the wound.
Yeah, and proof of the pudding, this was never about one phone.
Right. Which now has me wondering, at what point does this turn around and bite the FBI and the Department of Justice? At what point are we going to have another Senate Judiciary Committee hearing where Director Comey is sitting under oath and justifying why some company needs to work around their own encryption, and which representative is going to say, "But you told us just one phone, just this once." And then after that case, after you got into that phone, you said, "And we're going to keep pursuing this in the courts with other phones."
Well, okay. The flip side is that they don't have the precedent that we suspect that they were after all along. They don't have that precedent, right? They
correct
this. Their successful attempt to have the courts order Apple to do this thing, which is to create software that bypasses security in iOS, did not complete the appeals process, and therefore won't be any kind of
there won't be any precedent set from this.
Yeah. And in fact, the only open case right now that I'm aware of is
the New York drug case.
The New York case dealing with a drug dealer. But that's a slightly different case because the government, well, the judge basically said the government was out of line compelling mm-hmm. Apple's help. And in that case, the government wasn't even asking for the same thing, the same level of help.
That's true. Yeah, they weren't.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. So, you know, Apple released a statement basically saying, we're glad this particular case is over, but you shouldn't have been doing this in the first place.
Yeah, Apple was pretty clear in their response.
The EFF, that's the Electronic Freedom Foundation, and the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, both issued statements saying that the government was wrong to do this, and the EFF specifically asked for the government to back down.
And I'm totally going to go mostly pedantic on you. It's Electronic Frontier Foundation.
What did I say?
You said Electronic Freedom Foundation.
Oh, I do that. I do that every. I just have this massive block on their name. Like, but I get their name wrong all the time.
But still, I mean, at least you came up with a really good name.
That's true. My name is whatever. I get that right. Just like, I'm always getting that wrong. I cannot remember. It's like several other things that I have blocks on.
Yeah. Well, and the upside is, because I called you out right now, you're not going to get buried under emails from listeners.
Well, they could. They could go, Jeff got you.
Well, that's true. Yeah. If you have a problem with Brian messing up the Electronic Frontier Foundation's name, please send him an email.
Yes, please. Please send me an email.
Anyhow, I interrupted you. Carry on.
Anyway, they both issued statements. The DOJ basically said, "Nanny, nanny, boo boo, we're going to keep doing this because we got to have it." So this is so far from over. What really worries me, and what I think will happen, is that they're going to go after a softer target. They're going to go after an app company that offers some kind of encrypted messaging service.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to try to get, they're going to try to get that precedent with the All Writs Act.
It wouldn't surprise me if you're right. Go for an easier target, get your precedent, and then push it with the harder targets like Apple.
Yes. They probably actually regret having not done that in the first place.
I'm sure in retrospect, they really do. But my guess is going into this case, they were thinking, how could we lose? This is the perfect case. We get to say terrorist. We have mass shooting. It's all on American soil, and
we don't really care how long it takes because we know there's nothing on this thing.
Right. So it looked like a total win situation for the FBI and DOJ at the time.
Perfect storm.
And as it turns out, no, it wasn't. And it's just become this mess where they exploited a horrible tragedy and it didn't pay off the way they wanted.
Yeah, I'm not going to say they exploited a terrible tragedy. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to put that on them, man.
I just did.
They definitely were optimizing a bad situation, but I don't think they were exploiting a bad situation. I mean, they to be fair, they have a legitimate reason for wanting to get into the phone. Doesn't matter whether or not the phone has anything on it in both ways. Like, to me, it doesn't matter if the phone does have something on it. Apple shouldn't be forced to, you know, make us all weaker against the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Right?
Yep.
But the flip side of it is that it doesn't matter if there's nothing on it. The FBI has a legitimate reason to want to get on the phone. It's just that legitimate reason runs into the face of reality. I don't blame the FBI for wanting to be on this phone by any stretch of the imagination. Just like I mean, it was right for them to get Apple to give them access to the data that Apple has on its servers because Apple holds the encryption keys.
Mm-hmm.
That was an appropriate thing to do.
And Apple gave them that data.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I still think there's some exploiting going on. And I'm okay with us not agreeing on the terms there.
All right. Fair enough.
I guess it's safe to say that my faith in our federal law enforcement agencies has been shaken.
My faith when it comes to this, then we could get into the federal forfeiture laws.
Yeah,
that's completely different. My faith there is very, very low. But that's another topic. Listen, if you want to yell at us or tell us how awesome we are, either way, tell us what idiots we are. If you've made it through this far, you're either really mad at us or you're mostly agreeing with us.
Or you're like those people that slow down on the highway to look at the wreck.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, we are at Context Machine on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
At Context Machine. It's a relatively new account for us, and we'd be happy if you followed us there, be happy if you yelled at us there or spoke to us there, gave us tips there, asked us to explore specific topics there, asked questions, told us we were wrong, catch us in fact-checking.
Told us Brian's wrong, catch him in fact-checking.
Whatevs.
Yeah,
you know, tomato, tomato. So, whatever you want to do, whatever way you want to interact with us, we want to hear from you at Context Machine on Twitter. And I'm TM O'Brien.
And I'm at Jay Gamut.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
I think we're out of time.
Yep, we pretty much are. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our balance provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.